Dr. Dara Appetin, welcome to the MTIC podcast.
I am happy to be here with all my shenanigans that I just brought into this session. I am happy that you guys have allowed me to sit in with you with how I busted through this internet door towards you. Hi.
We are just so happy to have you and all the energy that you bring, because it is, as always, the most relatable and universally experienced
energy. I'm glad
energy.
I'm not alone on this island.
Never. Are you even living life if you don't have shenanigans coming at you all the time?
No. I feel like, especially in motherhood and parenthood and like working, like if you can't deal with a shenanigan every now and again, like what are you actually even doing with yourself?
Exactly. Embrace the shenanigans.
Exactly. Exactly.
I love it.
Shenanigan.
Well, Daryl, we usually do like a formal introduction and then we're going to just keep diving deep with you. So today we're joined by you, Dr. Daryl Appetin, an award-winning executive strategist and speaker. You're a licensed therapist, host of Feelings and Other F-Words, a globally ranked Vogue-featured mental health podcast, which we love listening and honored to be on a couple of weeks ago. Admirably, you cut through the feel-good fluff and really dive deep to explore the brain and the body and behavior behind why we do what we do, and always with honesty and science and a well-placed F-word or two, which we appreciate. So, Daryl, thank you so much for being here with us today on the MTIC.
That made me sound so put together and so with it. Thank you. Thank you for reminding me that version exists in the ether.
We love a formal introduction because it always like puts people like, wait, is that me? Like, yes, bask in that, girl. That's you.
It's sometimes we need to be reminded of it every now and again.
No, we're so excited to have you on today. I was thinking before this recording, like this is the type of episode that if I was scrolling on Spotify or like one of my followed podcasts came on and I saw your name and like what you do or what I'm sure are, you know, little taglines or themes of this episode will be, I would immediately be pressing play. So honestly, it feels like a little, even though we've already had a conversation and we've been on your pod, it feels like a little out of body for me because I'm like, oh, like these are the exact conversations that I was hoping we would be able to have in creating this space. So I'm just really so excited that you're here today with us and that you're taking the time.
Did you manifest me? So am I here through manifestation?
I think I did. Based on our pre-wire, I really think I did. I need to chill out. I need to pull back a little bit.
And honestly, one of our big themes of this week is manifesting for socials. So look at that.
Yeah,
it is. See, ladies and gentlemen, it can happen. It can happen to you. No, this is amazing. No, and I think it's so important for us to have the conversations that you guys are having on your social, on your podcast, and even what we were doing over in my podcast of just helping people relate, not with toxic positivity, not with toxic or performative positivity, but we can do hard things and it can suck and we can still have strategies to get better. And I was very taken with you guys on how much you brought to the table with action steps. And I think that everybody that's out there listening, like, this podcast offers something that a lot don't, and that is you guys really do give people tangible things to think about and do. And that, I think, is exactly what we are looking for and what we need as stressed out, burnt out human beings just trying to figure out our way through our shenanigans.
Oh, you just, that's our done goal. You get us. Okay, you get it. Thank you for saying that.
It's so nice to be seen. Yeah, no, it's true. I'm from Jersey. Hello. We
you
don't
get
say
it.
Nice things just because. Because it's true.
Nope.
That's so true. But there's something to be said, right, about those conversations that can oscillate between like, here's some tangible, concrete things to put in your back pocket. And we're also going to have like a relatable, girly chit chat because that's fun to listen to also. So done goal.
100%.
And in the vein of being like honest and transparent, I think I struggle in real life to not be that person when people don't need that too, right? Like if a friend calls and they just want a vent and they don't want solutions, it's not a non-zero that like I'm going to not come in and be like, okay, so like here's like what I would do, or like here's how we can like work through this and maybe create a schedule. And it's like, I literally just want a vent right now. I don't need a solution. And I still struggle with that every day. So I think this, I know that this is a very good outlet for me to like, be structured with that. But it's still something I work on every day. So I recognize like there's a time and a place, and I'm grateful to have the outlet to do that.
Also, all of Mel's friends, like, don't call her if you don't want an action step. Like, that's the other part of this. Like, you got to know your friends. I have this thing with my clients. I'm like, you get 15 minutes of complaining or venting, and then it becomes complaining. And then you're just basking in the problem. So if you want to talk to me, you get 15 minutes, get it all out. But then we are going to move forward from it, and we're going to empower you to do so, because then you start crowdsourcing, you know, just like how you want to feel about it. And you start seeking out people that are going to validate you, and we can get addicted to that piece.
Totally.
So I do think that there's a healthy balance between you're allowed to feel what you're feeling. You should feel what you're feeling. You should name it. Absolutely. But then what are you going to do about it? And do you notice that it's happening time and time again in a pattern? And like yeah. that to me is where I want to move people forward in absolutely have feelings, but feelings are not facts and you can't take them as such.
Totally. And if you're continuously stuck in a complain, don't change cycle, who's to blame for that?
Yeah.
And what you going to do about it?
100%. That I really like the way you phrase that, because I felt a radical shift in the last couple of years. I'm about to be 35, so it's like my early to mid 30s, of knowing when I'm really deep in something, like not to call the person that I know is just going to validate that, which like sometimes you do need it. But I found like, I'm like, I honestly like can't call my mom about this, or I can't call my best friend about this right now, because it's going to pull me deeper. And that's not their intention, because they do just want me to feel seen and heard right now. But like, I know I got to pull myself out of this a little bit, because it's not going to make things mm-hmm. better in this moment. And I think that's growth in itself right there, to be able to identify that. Because for a large period of my life, I think I would just be really going out there and seeking that validation.
I think that's so important on a friendship side of things. Like, obviously corporate, right? You want your team built with people with different strategies, but also you want your friendships to have that dynamic to them where they are different and you're not going to get the same thing from every person. Yes, respect. Yes, you know, taking into account like we still need to be kind in how we deliver things. I'm talking to a bunch of Jersey girls. So yes, we all need to be kind in how we deliver things, but you can still deliver the truth. And that should be what friendships are also about. It's not just like, oh my God, yes, girl. I was in this group chat with a woman who I adore, and like she has like put all of her favorite people in this chat, so I'm honored to be there. She's going through this tough time, she's going through a divorce, and so many of her friends were validating something that happened, and I like side texted her. I was like, ma'am, part of you fucked up here, like part of this, like you did not her divorce, but like this piece right here, don't worry about it, like don't get into the weeds, but like you got to move forward from it, because it's going to end up hurting you. Like, you didn't do the right thing, it's okay. And I said it much 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 nicer than that. I was like, I feel like somebody needs to tell her that outside of the group chat, because if not, it's going to happen again. And I wouldn't be a friend if I'm going to just let you walk into the same bear trap over and over and over again with this thing that's easily fixable and isn't anybody's like, quote unquote, fault. But like, if you don't fix it, then it becomes your fault.
100%. And I'm sure she knows that's the bucket of friendship that you're in for her, right? That like you are going to be that friend that side texts her and is like, ma'am.
Or you get blocked, you know,
Yeah.
Lesson learned.
If you're going to be my friend, that's a chance that I'm willing to take of like, I want to tell you an observation, and I could be wrong, but I want you to also hear it from me, somebody who loves and cares about you rather than somebody else.
Totally. Mel and I always say like, punt it back to me if you need to, because we need that. Everybody needs that. But what a beautiful gift it is to get that from like a close girlfriend who's willing to share it.
Permission to punt. Well, it feels like a great time to bring on Two Truths and Lies as we talk about being so truthful and honest.
Let's go
ahead, Michelle.
So, Daryl, yeah, so a huge part of our space is this concept of two truths, no lies, which is a permission slip to say two conflicting thoughts or feelings or experiences can exist at the same time. And Mel and I find ourselves sharing probably like 1,000 two truths, no lies every day, honestly, at this point. So we always love to ask our guests to share a two truths, no lies. It's usually affixed to some type of brief anecdote or story. So we'd love to hear what you have brought to our two truths, no lies table today.
So I'm going to stick with, we were off camera after recording my podcast. I'm going to stick with that answer.
Amazing.
That you can deeply love your spouse and never want to leave them and still have divorce fantasies, or still have like, how am I going to get away with murder if this were to happen, right? Like, I think, like, again, I'm getting, being a little facetious, please don't kill your spouse. But I do think that there is something to be said about, like, you could, just like your children, but the other side of that, like, the, your partnership that you are in with a person, and that might be your mother, or that might be, you know, a close friend of, like, it can be something that is incredibly fulfilling and wonderful. And also, if you don't stop right now, I will make this look like an accident and no one will find out, right? Like, I think, like, that is okay. I was talking with my cousin, who's my best friend, and we were talking about, like, you know, we would never, we have no plans on divorce. She's like, but I do have divorce fantasies, right? Like, every other weekend, in theory, not in practice, like, kind of sounds wonderful. And I know saying that out loud, some women or some people are gonna be like, oh my God, that's horrible. Like, I just mean, like, the idea of having, like, an entire weekend to yourself away. And I think that's also something that we need to normalize. Of like, it's life to me, and what I tell my clients a lot is, like, you got to look at 80-20. 80% of life should be amazing. It should be great. Like, whether it's your job or your relationship, it should be really fulfilling. 20% is allowed to be a little fucked up. 20% is allowed to be a little bit messy. And that is part of life. And I work with a lot of surgeons, and we talk about this idea of, like, the OR cannot be entirely sterile. There's no such thing. You have to make room for, like, a little bit of contaminant. That's the same thing in life. Like, you got to make room for a little bit of bullshit, because, like, there is no perfect situation. There is no perfect marriage. There is no perfect mothering or fathering. There's no perfect child. You got to make way for 20% of that bullshit. And being self-aware enough to understand, is this part of the bullshit pile, or is this, like, something that is actually deeply wrong within this friendship, relationship, whatever? And being able to assess and understand that, I think, is incredibly important. So I hope that answers the question.
Sure does. Love that. Love that 80-20 application, too, to, like, there's always going to be some type of contaminant. It can't always be sterile. I love that visualization.
No, and so many times people come to me and they're like, I hate my job, I hate this, I hate it. And I'm like, great, but are you having a bad day, or is this a bad decision? Like, is this something that is not a good fit for you entirely? Or is this part of your job, your life, that, like, you don't like? I don't like scheduling doctor's appointments. Like, I don't like doing that stuff, but it's, do I throw out the babies? Like, do I be like, you gotta go, kids, sorry, get out of here. I hate going to the playground with you. Like, no, like, it's part of it. And some of the stuff we laugh about, but when we get so in our heads, and when we do, to our previous conversation, have that echo chamber of people saying, like, oh God, you should leave, that don't sit at a table where you're not valued. Like, there's an element of truth to that, but you also have to be incredibly self-aware of all the other stuff that is at that proverbial table, and mm-hmm. what you're giving up if you do leave without deep thought and understanding and consideration beyond how you feel about sitting at that table.
Right. It's profound.
Wow. That is so profound. Yeah, for real. You said, Michelle and I love isms and, like, quick phrases. You said, is this a bad day or a bad decision? And that hit me. Like, I feel like my eyes welled up, like, involuntarily. That is so profound, because it's so incredibly true in every domain of life, right? Right now I'm 7 months pregnant. I'm a bit hormonal from day to day. So sometimes while my reactions might be a little inflated to what's going on around me, right? And I think it's, like, really quick. It can go really quick, especially in my relationship, where I'm, like, thinking about the world view. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, how could we be here right now? And it's like, it started from, like, the tiniest little thing. God bless my husband. And, like, honestly, that ism right now in my life, or that mantra, would be really grounding for me. Like, is this a bad day or bad decision? Again, I'm not, like, thinking about divorce with my husband. He is, like, the absolute best. And there's days where I am, like, wiped, and he's a safe space, and I take it out on him, and that's not fair. But wow, that's a really grounding way to look at things. And, like you said, in work and all
it keeps you from just taking off on, I feel this way. Because, like, again, like, we get off on our feelings, because when you think about it, a feeling is just a chemical reaction. When you look at the brain, there's a stimuli, and your brain doesn't decide what the chemical reaction is, fight or flight, cortisol, dopamine, right? Like, you don't get to decide that. But what happens after that initial trigger of a stimulus, whether positive or negative, is all of a sudden your brain starts to do this thing where it starts to sort it into categories. Did this happen before? Does this person remind me of this person? What's going on here? Last time we had this fight, this thing then happened. And we start to jump to a conclusion. But the only thing we actually have clinical control over is our narrative, is being able to say, like, I can feel this because I cannot control that feeling. That's not the point. Like, therapy, the point of therapy is not to stop having those feelings. The point is to know what to do with them when they come up. So for me, it's like, when you have a grounding thing like that, or you have a mantra, or you have a thing being like, ooh, hold on, am I just having like a bad moment? Or is this like not for me? Is this a bad thing for me? Then all of a sudden I get to change the narrative. And once you realize that you're the author of your story, the second half of your life begins.
I love that. It's the metacognitive questioning that has to become so habitually ingrained in your day-to-day thinking. That's the self-awareness piece you were getting at before. But I think it also like dovetails into the larger conversation around like what happens to you as you evolve and as your roles change and as you go from not being a parent to being a parent. And all of that change, like underneath that, can come resentment for just having your physical body change so much when your partner isn't really dealing with any of those things. And the list goes on and on and on. But when you take time to really understand like all that's changing around you, it makes sense why you might be feeling the way that you are.
After I had the twins, I was, and I mean this sincerely, like I'm not even being funny, I was irrationally angry at my husband's nipples. I was so mad.
So relatable.
Like for purely decorative purposes. Like I was so, like, and every time I saw them, like I was like, and people are gonna think I'm crazy. I was like, you need to put a shirt on because I'm just so angry at your body. Right now.
That's, and like, so
I
think funny.
Again, like that was give me some grace, people, like that was hormonal. I had twins. Like I was like really like, you know, trying to like regulate back to some sort of new normal. And it like really struck me. You're talking and I'm like, oh yeah, like we do feel these things. Now, am I still mad at them? No, not as much. I guess like maybe once in a while I'll have a flare up like you and your decorative nipples. But I do think that like there is something to be said that you, through parenthood or whatever your change is, maybe you got a bonus kid, or maybe you're getting married, or you're molding a family within other families that were fractured, right? Like there's so much as you get deeper into adulting that we're not equipped for because we've never had to do it before. And it's right. A great time to step back and learn about yourself and learn what your feelings are trying to tell you, because really they're just biomarkers for some sort of pain or some sort of, you know, joy that's underneath that you should uncover. That's part of, in my opinion, why we're here and what we're here to do is to help us understand ourselves and hopefully to help our children understand who they are as they navigate this world.
Totally, totally. I have a sidebar anecdote. I'd be remiss if like I didn't carve out a little bit of space to share right now. Last night, I was having trouble falling asleep, so I don't know why I got here. And I'm a type of girl that's like, the rear views exist. I'm going to acknowledge the rear views, but I'm looking ahead sort of thing. But last night, since I was struggling to fall asleep, I was like, you know what? Let me go back like 10 years in my life and think about my like wake up routine the whole day. What did that look like? Like through New York City, went to SoulCycle, came home, literally the whole thing, went to work, everything from start to finish. And I'm visualizing all this. And then I was thinking about how different my day to day is right now. And I'm grateful and I'm shocked at the amount of time that I don't have for me. And the amount of time that I did have for me back then that I didn't even know, right? And then I was thinking about like my husband, same 10 years ago versus today. And I'm like, wow, his life kind of seems the same, but mine is drastically different, grateful and starkly different. And it's just like a really powerful exercise to kind of reorient and be like, huh. That's why I'm feeling that way. Or that's why I might be feeling some resentment when you come home. And I know you're tired. I've done the commute. I get it. And it's just powerful.
Right. The decorative nipples of
wow.
The nipples of the world. Decorative nipples of the world. You need to identify the decorative nipples. And like, it's not their fault on a lot of levels, but that does exist. And
it does.
It's allowed to make you irrationally angry. And you need to do something about it because it will continue to make you angry. It doesn't clear up on its own. It's
Correct.
Not a pimple. Jimmy's nipples are not going anywhere. Hopefully neither are mine. But that's like part of this of like, it isn't fair. And I remember my mom saying that to me again. She's a Jersey girl through and through. And I remember being like, it's not fair. And she's like, yeah, no, it's not fair. You're right. And you got to get over that because it will never be fair. Like being a mom is wonderful. You're going to have so much stuff that Jimmy doesn't and experiences. And also what comes with that is all the bullshit. And I say that with love, but that's what comes with it. So there's no such thing as fair. It won't ever be fair, especially for women, especially for working women. And you just got to get over that and find a way to forge through and be happy and create and control the narrative.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's beautiful. And I want to call back to what we were talking about earlier. But Michelle, first of all, thank you for sharing that. Because like that is something I would say. And that's like actually not a very Michelle coded thing. So I absolutely love that exercise and the conclusion you came to. And what I love about you and the space and what we were talking about earlier is you're going to walk away from that, like mm-hmm. not angry at your husband tomorrow or not like, oh, he's got to do more. See, this is the problem. You're walking away saying, mm-hmm. I need to carve out more space for myself.
Yeah, 100%. I'm assuming 100%.
That was probably an exercise, right? And that is the perfect example of being like strategic and solution oriented and knowing like that's not going to change, you know, and
no.
that you don't want to start commuting to the city either, like you said, right? Like you don't want to start doing that. But how do we get more
right
time for you?
Yeah, exactly. Hindsight 2020. But again, if you're in a complain, don't change cycle, vent, get some insights from the people you know will give it to you and then come up with some solutions together for you to carve out whatever that looks like and feels like. So
you bring up such a beautiful point, too, imagery-wise. And, you know, a lot of times I will tell my clients, like, you have to think of yourself in a car. Your headlights only go so far on purpose. Like, you cannot see to the end of your journey on purpose because you will miss the things right in front of you. And that's not necessarily a beautiful thing. That's like the deer that is running across the street ready to, like, total your car. Like, there's a reason why you can only see so far in front of you. Just as your rear view mirrors are important, especially when you're switching lanes, like you have to look back to see what could be creeping up behind you in your own psyche or in your own patterns of behavior or whatever to make sure that the journey is as, and I'm going to say safe, and I mean that in a like uppercase S, lowercase F, like, but as like safe and sound as possible mm-hmm. for you. So I love that you guys are like actively doing that because this is all the advice that I would give.
Well yes. Done. Harmonious.
Yeah, I love it. No, these analogies are literally metaphors are like me drinking a Celsius right now. Like the way in which these are coming out,
ready,
I'm like
kick down
oh
a door.
My God,
ready to, like,
I love
Shania
that.
Train it.
Literally though.
Literally, I'm like,
that's amazing. Daryl, we always love to carve out space to understand and just like shine a spotlight on your why and your work and your podcast. So whatever direction you want to go in to answer that, we'd love to just shine the spotlight.
Thank you. I love that. For me, my why, there's a lot of whys. I'll stick with the professional for right now of why I do what I do. Outside of just like my children and doing that. But I think for me, it's very important to arm people so that they can empower themselves to take up space in their own world. Like I love the idea of people occupying their own world. And I feel like Instagram and TikTok and all this other like Insta therapy has really put me on edge because there's so much not great advice out there. There's really good advice. But I do think that we need to carve out space for ourselves to figure out our own plan and not just what somebody else gives us and not just what we're told or what's cool or what we think, you know, we should be doing. I find that alignment and authenticity are my huge why. And I try to bring that into parenting. I try to bring that into any conversations. I had like a weird celebrity moment this weekend. I was out at like a gala and somebody's like, oh my God, I know you from Instagram. And I was like, me? And they're like, you're exactly how you are online. And I'm like, yeah, well, who else would I be?
Right. But
I sat back and Jimmy and I were talking about it on the way home. And he was like, that was really cool. Like, what did you think? And I was like, it was nice not to be recognized, because I don't give a shit about that. It was nice to know that I'm showing up as me in whatever space I occupy, because I think that's so important. So a lot of the work that I do is self-awareness, whether that's on a team level, whether that's on an individual level, whether that's in my Instagram. My podcast started because I wanted people to understand psychologically why we are the way we are and what to do with it. So that to me is my why. And having two little girls, you know, I want them to understand their why and how they are going to be authentic and aligned throughout their lives. And that's not always going to come easy. That's not always like the easiest path forward, but it's the worthwhile one in my mind. So that's, I suppose, a very crude answer to your question.
I love that. No, it's so true. It's like these two huge tenets of alignment and authenticity. And most of the time, it's not the easiest road traveled, but the most important ones for sure.
I was thinking about when you said like all the advice that you get online right now and how we really are in such need of like people understanding that these need to be holistic approaches and not just one-off, like this will work, because everything's sold to you, whether it's a morning routine, a supplement, or a groundbreaking, you know, Mel Robbins new mantra, which lover, right? But like it's sold as like that is what's going to fix everything, that one thing. And I think back to being, you know, like 17 or even, you know, younger, and you're reading a magazine and it's like, this is the best shampoo to use, right? You knew also that that shampoo, even at that age, like, you know, that like that's also an advertisement, right? Like they're paying to like be listed as like the top five, right? Whereas now there's not that filter to know, and you're not knowing that even if that influencer or content creator is 100% authentic in that has changed for them, they are entering with a million other things that are different than that person consuming that content. And it's not holistic. Whereas like the one shampoo that's paying to be in the article that we then would use in our hair and try it and be like, oh, it didn't work. Like we're talking like much bigger things now. And we're just not seeing 99% of all the other things that they might be doing to help scaffold that recommendation. And I think it is such an important call out. And I kind of hope that there's like a bubble bursted eventually on this, because it's getting so inflated and worse and worse.
And, you know, I think growing up in the 90s, you were using herbal essences, obviously, as your shampoo of choice, because who wasn't? But I do think, too, that to your point, and I think it's an important one, the line between reality and fantasy, or real and fake, or real and inflated, or real with, you know, an advertisement supporting or sponsoring the real, it's hard to disseminate, especially for young people, as they are fully immersed in online. You know, our generation was the last one. We're digital natives, but we're the last one to be like, bullshit. You know, like we weren't fully in it, like where we don't know where that line is. And again, self-awareness to me is like the key and the cornerstone to all of that. If you don't know about yourself, you can't possibly understand what you want. And it makes you so susceptible to being sucked into whatever feels good, but might not be good for you.
Yes.
And I think, you know, allowing ourselves to do the deep work, go to therapy, go and find a therapist that like actually matches what it is that you're looking for and calls you out on your shit. Like, I had this conversation with somebody the other day. I love therapists. I've also known a lot of therapists. And the way we're training therapists has changed drastically. But like, go to somebody who is going to push you a bit. Go to somebody who, you know, may not see things exactly the way you see them. They see you, but they might not see what you're, you know, trying to present as a problem or as a solution. You know, put yourself in rooms with people that you disagree with, but have respect for. Like that type of stuff. I was having a conversation about starting. I want to start like a supper club up here in Newport, Rhode Island, and have deep conversations with women, like dinner and dialogue, to do things like this and bring in experts and have education, but also to like talk about stuff that isn't always fluffy. grief, loss, even politics, like bring it on. Like I want women especially to start to have these conversations and build community, not around the things that we're similar on, but around our differences and creating that mosaic of friendship or support or allies, where we don't need to be aligned on every little thing in our lives. Like we can be different and still support each other.
You are speaking to the inner depths of my soul. I've been talking about this so much recently with Michelle and like anyone else that will listen to me. The frame mostly being politics, but like I think it applies outside of that too. And just that like we've fundamentally lost the ability to have conversations with people that don't agree with us. And it's become so personal and so like visceral to talk to someone who disagrees with you on something. And I felt we're not going to go down that road, but just in short, whether it's just the world around us, I've been feeling a bit helpless these days. And there's a part of me that believes like, okay, the only way that I can find myself not feeling helpless would be maybe to be trying to do things on a small scale, which the only thing I could really think of that felt like an authentic place for me to begin is helping people to bridge the gap in communication and conversations and talking about things that are uncomfortable to talk about and learning how to do that in a safe space. And it's just so important. And to your point, like outside of politics and everything, it's just we're losing the ability to do that because we don't have to, because we can scroll through, we can hide in our phones, and the generations after us, it's really, really scary.
I can't think about this conversation without like really putting on my early childhood educator mind. And these conversations start young and they start in the home and then they're carried into school in a very productive, effective, explicit way. You have to teach explicitly how to respectfully disagree with someone, and that you're going to cross paths with people that you agree with and you're going to cross paths with people that you don't agree with. And those two things exist always and forever. But it's very clear to me when I encounter a grown-up who needs to work on those skills, like, okay, noted. Like, that was hard for you when you were a kid and it needed to be a little more explicitly taught and practiced. Social stories, like all, I know all the strategies that they needed when they were a child and it was too late. So that's why I'm so passionate about like going young, because that's where the work happens.
Yeah, I did a podcast not too long ago about family fractures, and 1 in 4 adult children will be estranged from a member or members of their family. 1 in 4. And these are numbers that are like epidemic type level. And I can't help but think.
Holy shit. That's crazy.
And all the research and things that I found about it was mostly how baby boomers were raised, was like, that's your family. Blood is thicker than water. And how millennials, Gen X, Gen Z was raised was like, if you don't like what's at that table, you can get up and leave. And I think many things can be true and neither can be true. And I do think that without being able to have difficult conversations, it will continue on. And I think about my kids of, I don't ever want them thinking that I never saw things their way or this is how it has to be done. Like, I want them to be able to come to me and we can agree to disagree or be like, you know what, this topic is something that we don't talk about together because like, there's no point. We're not changing each other's mind. And that shouldn't be the point of a conversation. It shouldn't be to change somebody's mind. It should be to learn, listen, understand, grow. So I do think like as a whole, zooming out and looking macro, this is important to our relationships, because then you're only going to be around people that you agree with and agree with you. And if you're my only tribe, I'm not going to want to break that. I'm not going to want to step outside the only people that support me. So anything you say, I'm going to want to agree with, because I don't want to be ousted, because I see what happened. So I do think that it is something so important. And I'd love to bring in something fun and chic. If you follow me on Instagram, I'm very aesthetic, something aesthetically pleasing to like put together to do this with women. And if you guys out there listening want to do stuff like this, like I say, go for it. Bring a bunch of friends together that maybe you don't know that well. Maybe it's a bunch of mom friends. Like invite them out. Talk about things. Say that these are the rules. Like this is a safe space. Like when I ask you how you are, good is not an answer. You need to tell me how you are. Like, how are you really? Like I want people to start having those and normalizing having conversations that are allowed to be deep and allow you to not have to leave agreeing, but you can leave as friends.
I love that. I think, and also in that, setting the expectation going in is so key. There's the book on the Art of Gathering, and it's all about, you know, setting those expectations as you go in is a really, really important cornerstone of that, to create a safe space for like yourself and your guests. And if you're going into it saying like, these are going to be the ground rules tonight. And if not everyone feels comfy to be there, and not everyone wants that type of environment, then that's their permission slip and no harm, no foul. But like, setting that expectation going in, I also think is really great, because, you know, we've all been in situations where you might be at a dinner or a gathering or something, and something takes a turn and not everyone wants to be there. And that's a really uncomfy place to be when people aren't active participants at the table, if that makes sense. And we're all entering from the same place of knowing like, hey, I know you're a good person. You know, I'm a good person. I'm not here to change your mind. You're not here to change my mind.
Right.
I'm just here to listen. And it could
be something even like parenting styles, right? How you decide to parent, whether that's gentle parenting, whether that's fuck around and find out parenting, whether
that's those like bad,
a blend of the two.
Something in between.
Like, who was it? I'm forgetting their name. Some influencer, somebody just came out of like why they're going to spank their kid.
I know exactly what you're talking about. They were like, yeah, no, we are going to spank our children. And it became again, like headline news.
Having conversations, because I would want to know like, ooh, help me understand how you got there. Like, do you just like beating your kid? Like, you know, I'm sure that's not it. But I do think that there's, when we enter into conversations with questions rather than accusations, you can learn so much, because my judgments are going to keep me from ever learning about why this person decided to do this. Doesn't mean that I would adopt it or you would adopt it. It just means like, why would I keep them out of any conversation that I would have? I would want to learn. But I think, you know, I found like mom and motherhood, especially at school now, there's almost like these silos sometimes on the playground of like the mean moms or like the, you know, the moms that are like the loners. And again, I'm like being stereotypical on purpose. But I do find that like we're all going through motherhood or parenthood, and to be able to reach out and communicate and like not touch like physically, don't give them their personal space, but like touch another human in like an emotional way of like, you're not by yourself and we don't have to be exactly the same. We don't need to do it exactly the same. Like, there's something really beautiful about that, because statistically, mothers especially feel the most lonely than they've ever felt. It's like 80% of mothers have recorded like record loneliness.
And think about the amount of people that shut out other potential, like really deep connections because of one part of that person that they may not agree with, right? And I get like when you are in motherhood and you're in the trenches of it and someone parents differently than you, like that can be a really hard, like blood brain barrier to get through, because like that's so much of your identity. And it could be, you could apply that to like any of the really, you know, hard hitting.
Not wrong, domains. But different.
Not wrong, but different. And I think just remaining compassionately curious and understanding that while that might look different, like there's probably other parts of that person that you could deeply connect with. And going back to kind of those friendship buckets, and not everyone needs to be everything for you. And it's finding a balance. And I think a lot of people get on guard too, or if they see people that might be doing things that make them feel less than, or make them, or, you know, shine a mirror to something that they were hoping for in their life at that point in time, or whatever it might be, then they shut down as well, versus like, well, maybe that's a great energy for you to be around. Like, maybe that person could help bring that side out of you versus making you feel smaller. Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to that 80-20. You don't need to be friends with people who, like, do not support you or bring you down or have a pattern of behavior of destruction for you. But I think we're talking about initially not shutting somebody out because of something we've seen, heard, or maybe misunderstood. But again, like, you don't need to keep people in your life that are clinically toxic of like, you need to know how this person has negatively impacted you. You need to have given them the opportunity to change that with a conversation if you want to keep them around. Because I also think we expect people to change without ever talking to them about it. Like that like in-law conversation that we have so much, like there's always going to be friction as when you blend families. And if you don't give people the opportunity to try to fix it, it won't ever get fixed, and you're just going to be annoyed. But at the same time, if you give people an opportunity to fix it and they don't and repeatedly continue on the same behaviors, that's a data point. Now you have to figure out what you want to do with that. But you have at least tried and put it out there. So again, I'm not suggesting everything should be perfect and we should all be kumbaya. I am suggesting that life is going to be much more rewarding and fruitful when we don't have preconceived notions, and that when we allow ourselves experiences and use those as data points to then make future decisions.
Totally. And if you see something or feel something, say something and do something. Because it won't happen if you're not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't expect it. It's so, so powerful and true. Daryl, we have some really good listener questions that we'd love to get your insights on.
Yes, let's do it.
Okay. So the first question is, in the vein of burnout and balance, so some themes that we've touched on, but more specifically, the question is, as a mom of 2 under 4, I feel like I'm running on empty, but still expected to show up for work, my kids, and my marriage. How do I know if I'm just tired or truly burned out? And I don't even know what the first step would be to pulling myself out of this.
You are burnt out because you're trying to do it all, and that's okay. I think the way forward is to understand and do an energy audit, which I do with my clients a lot, of almost look at it like a bank account. How much energy is it taking for you to go to work? Okay, let's break that down. I hate the commute. Okay, is there another way to get there that might be a little bit better, whether it's a ride share, whether it's a carpool, whether whatever. Is it something else in your life that is draining energy unnecessarily that you don't have right now? I think becoming a mom and being a working mom, I realized I didn't have as much energy to expend on a bunch of stuff that I used to. So the emails that don't go anywhere, or the phone calls of people just like needing something or checking in, like I have now like compartmentalized that of like, this is when I respond to emails that are non-work related, or I try to go out with my friends every so often. I can't do it as often. I'm also an introvert, so I want time to myself. Like, to me, doesn't mean I don't love my friends and my community. It just means like, I know I need that to be able to do these other things. So again, I would say self-awareness, understand where your energy drains are, understand where you get your energy spikes from, and then try to align within that. You can do anything, but you cannot do everything. And how you lean into certain areas of your life and then lean out and then into something else is finesse. And that's like a sway of alignment in my mind of being a little bit more cognizant of how much energy you give a certain thing at a given time.
Oh, I wish I could like click 15 seconds back and re-listen to that again. I can't wait. Cannot wait to re-listen to that and like literally ferociously take notes. The energy audit, love that concept.
Yeah. Do you have any, and the answer could be no, but do you have a general like equation for evaluating like something needs to change? Like when you've reached a point and you've done these things, like is there a point where you tell your clients like, it seems like what one of these balls needs to drop or needs to change because this has reached a point beyond.
Yeah. If you're bringing up the same issue week and week, time and time, it keeps, you know, showing up, it's impacting your work, your life, your relationships to a degree where now we're starting a trend in a different direction. I will say things to clients, and now I work less in the mental health side and more on the executive side, but I'll say to my executives, like, you pay me to fix problems. This is not getting fixed. So why are you paying me? Right? Like, I'm a little bit more direct with that. But like, I think there's something to be said of like, if the same shit is happening over and over, that's on you to make a decision to try something different. Doesn't need to be right the first time that you do it, but you do owe it to yourself to try a different way to do it. So the equation, I don't necessarily have an equation. I would look for patterns of behavior. You also said like, you know, understanding what balls are kind of being juggled. I also tell clients, like, if you in the moment need to understand, like, understand what's a rubber ball and what's a glass ball. If I drop this, it will not break. It will come back. I can get to that email later, the dishes later, whatever. The laundry doesn't need to be done tonight. And then there's a glass ball of like, if I drop this, I might not be able to get it back and I need to give attention to this thing. And rubber balls do become glass balls. Pushing off date night at some point will impact your relationship. So just being mindful, but also in that moment, having mantras or having kind of like almost like putting on glasses in that moment, like a prescription set of like, can I see this clearer without emotions getting in the way?
What advice would you also give someone who would be coming to you saying the same thing? And it's like, okay, I got to take a taste of my own medicine at some point or another. Mm-hmm. It's always easier to dish than to take it.
Oh, totally. That's why I like it on this side of the fence. Yep.
We have all the tools. It's just accessing and applying, right?
Exactly. You guys have to do the hard work, right? Like it's a thing. And again, like four, you know, two under four is tough, but it won't be that way forever. Like it is temporary. So if you need a mantra for even just that, like it is temporary. This stage will end. And sometimes even that will help you make it through that tough moment to get to the other side.
Yeah, that's a huge one for us. We come back to that all the time. Like what's unfamiliar right now won't be unfamiliar tomorrow, even if it's by a smidget. And it's temporary and it will not last forever. And that's not to make you feel guilt or this or, oh, I need to save her. No, it's actually to like tame that part and be like, it's going to end. Mm-hmm. The hard part's going to end and the good parts are going to end too.
Right.
Two truths. Okay, next question. Since becoming a mom, I feel like I've lost touch with who I was before kids. How can I reconnect with my sense of self while still being present for my family?
You have to lean into who you are outside of all the other hats that you wear. And literally finding time to do that is sometimes impossible being a mom and being a wife or whatever else you got going on. I find that the 5-minute vacation is a beautiful thing. Whether there's all those like memes and stuff and reels about like how you close the car door and like that walk around.
Yes.
It's like a vacation, right?
Yeah.
I kind of mean that, but a little bit more like show up at your kid's school 10 minutes early and just sit in the parking lot. Do not scroll on your phone. Read a book that you're trying to read. Like journal if that's your time to journal. Like use the things you're already doing and mold them to your will. And make that happen. It's not going to necessarily be hours and hours of you time. Oh, and I have found that like when I have like spa days and stuff, like I feel almost less like myself. I'm like, oh God, I have so much else to do. Oh my God. But I do find that the micro vacations of taking the long way home, of stopping and getting a coffee when like, do I need one? No, but like, I'm going to go get one. Cause like, I like that. Being a mom means finding agency again, because you are being told what to do, when to do it, how to do it all day, every day. So the you part needs to have agency over you. So doing stuff like that and having space to just be a chick in a car driving somewhere, right? On Kindercomac, right? Like just driving down the road. I want you to be able to have that without pressure, without rushing, do not call your mom in that moment. Do not take a work call. Like that time should be sacred. Like I'm very big on like your car as a like metaphorical and literal vehicle to take you from one place to another. Work
Same.
To life, drop off to, you know, friendship stuff, whatever. So that time in the car, I would say focus on that and start to utilize that as a way to start to feel like yourself in small doses.
So manageable and achievable. I think that's the piece. It's like these micro vacations, or we call it like these micro self TLC moments that you're already doing, but how can you become more intentional about carving it out for you? Put on a good song. I love that. Like saying no to calling someone, I feel like maybe you need that in that moment. Okay. But like, is that really going to accomplish a shift in your own identity? Probably not.
Nope. You will never talk to me while I'm in my car unless it's an emergency or unless I've been like, ooh, I can do this. I do, because I work from home mostly, I will do drives to nowhere because I don't have a commute necessarily. So when I can, and I try to do it twice a week, and I live right by Newport, Rhode Island, so it's gorgeous, I will take a drive around the island. I will listen to my 90s and 2000s R&B and hip hop. And I will pretend that I am that girl again that has no responsibilities other than to, like, I don't know, go tanning and sit out, you know, and not know what Facebook is, upload my pictures with my wire to my Facebook page. Like, that to me is so important to my self-care. It might look different to you guys or whoever's out there listening, but finding something that is you, that's the thing that's important, because that's agency.
Yeah. Love that. And a beautiful place to drive. You drive over that Jamestown Bridge, go right to Route 1, turn around, come back.
You know it, girl. That's right.
Love it.
Little
beautiful.
Grody girl inside of you.
Exactly. Home away from home. Mm-hmm. Okay, last question. And then we always like to end with a mantra or think about, you know, something tangible to save for a rainy day. So last question, and I love this one. There's so much pressure to be a perfect parent, especially if I go deep on Instagram, from meal prep to milestones to managing tantrums. How do I quiet the constant voice in my head that says I'm not doing enough?
Mm. Talk to it like you would a person. There's lots of research that when we actually take all of these voices and give them personas or give them character names, put them in outfits, like it's very gestalt therapy, sit them across from you and have a conversation of like, why do we need to do that? Like, why? We've never meal prepped. Why is today the day that we meal prep? And like, how does it make us better? Like, it actually might not. That to me is one of the easiest ways to have a conversation without judgment, again, like we were talking about before, with yourself about things that are going to come up. This is part of our society right now. You're going to be inundated. And if you haven't, good for you, but it might be a matter of like when, not if. So I do think that when you can name, even if you name it like your brain, name your brain, be like, listen, Carol, today is not the day for this.
I had a student name her brain Bitchy Betty. And I can't, Bitchy Betty, sit down, ma'am.
Exactly, exactly. An exercise I do with a lot of my clients is I have them name all the personalities on their bus, so to speak, their metaphorical bus that drives in their brain. And I'm like, which person is driving this route right now? And are they equipped? And if not, who needs to drive instead? So your most executive side, maybe it's the soldier in you that is like the most guarded and protected. Maybe it's the inner child that like just wants to have fun. Like, when you can name who it is that's driving and think about it that way, it's so much easier than like, what am I feeling? How am I feeling it? Where is it coming from? Is it rooted to trauma? Was it this time? Was it that time? No. When you can actually see the person that's driving and give it a character, then you can be like, oh, okay, stand down, Sarge. Like, we're not under attack. Like, back it up.
Right.
We actually need this person to drive right now. So all of these things, and again, it might not work for you, but there are tips and tricks, and it is in a moment, and not to quote Taylor Swift, but like, they are Band-Aids on bullet holes.
Please quote her.
It is August. But if you find that if it keeps going, you might want to hire or get somebody in your corner or, you know, reach out, support groups, whatever, to help you understand how to get over that hump. Because I can't do it alone. Like, I do it for a living. I absolutely have my people that I call on. I don't expect to do it all myself. I don't want to. I don't want to do it all by myself. But knowing that, and I will say the mental health therapist in me, if it is getting to a point where it is impacting your daily life, if it is getting to a point where loss of interest, all those kind of symptoms that you'll read, you know, on depression or, you know, severe anxiety, get there sooner to be with a person to help you through that than later. It is not a pimple. It does not clear up on its own. There needs to be some intervention, some strategy. It doesn't make you weak. It doesn't make you in any of those things. And for the rest of us, like, I believe in prophylactics, especially after having children. Do I believe in prophylactics? Like, get there, get ahead of things that might be stressful. Get ahead of looking at your calendar, being like, okay, they have their back to school transition. Okay, I'm going to need a little bit more energy to deal with that. Let me make sure my workload is a little bit lighter. Can I talk to my boss about that a bit more? Or can I talk to my significant other and say, I'm going to need a little bit more grace this week because we're transitioning back to school? Stuff like that, getting ahead of it absolutely matters. But the voices in your head will be there. And sometimes they just need to be heard, and you can treat them kind of like your kids. And that's not saying that, you know, derogatorily, but you can just sit there being like, I hear you, I get it, but we don't need to worry about that right now.
Simmer down, Bitchy Betty.
Exactly, Bitchy Betty. Like, my kids look fine in whatever they're wearing. They have on two mismatched shoes. They have on shoes. We're going to chalk it up as a win. Okay, Betty?
Right.
I love the visual of the bus because I think it gives permission to the multiple people.
So true.
In the head. Personas. Because I think one thing that can really trip you up is one day you can be feeling like you said, like, I as you were talking about, I'm picturing like bedtime, right? Like, some nights it's hard and sometimes it's easy, and sometimes most of the time it's right in between and it kind of oscillates throughout. But there's some nights where I feel like really patient and really just like, okay, like, let's, yeah, you know, let's put on a song. And then there's other nights I'm like really overstimulated and I'm gassed and my body hurts and I'm 7 months pregnant and I'm like, no, we can't do that right now. And I find myself getting like, why can't I just pull out the version of me that was here last night? And I know like, oh, well, today might have looked a little different and there's a few reasons I might be a little tired. I'm 7 months pregnant, whatever. But like having a visual of like, no, like, this is who's driving the bus today. And this is regardless of why, this is who's driving the bus today. So like giving myself grace in that moment and where that's coming from versus just comparing to the day before.
And the goal is for the wheels to go round and round, like not pop off. Right. So like naming that too, just like allows you to further befriend all of the personas and versions of the yourself on that stinking bus.
It's interesting because if you get into like Jungian psychology and even Freudian, Freud gets a bad rap, I think, despite some things that he absolutely needs to take accountability for. But
just like a few things, you know.
Or two. But I do think there's something to be said about each one of these personas was designed to protect you. So that soldier, so to speak, started out as a guard for a part of you that maybe couldn't defend itself, or that anger that you have started out as a way to protect a piece of you that needed protection. And without being checked, it grew in power, or it grew, you know, itself as you grew without any guidance. So all of our personas were designed by us, and they were there to help us at some point. Even our depressive states and our sadness, right, was meant to help us feel things and to be aware of our pain. But again, left unchecked, like anything, like mold grows. Growth for the sake of growth is the ideology of a cancer cell, right? Like growth needs to have a direction. Growth needs to have a purpose, and it needs to be edited and audited constantly, because without it, it becomes an infestation. So I think that all of your personalities, all of your personas were there to protect you. And we just need to take some time to get to know them, who we are now, especially post-parenting, and give them some guidance on how to better serve us.
Yeah. And I love what you said before, Dara, like if you need the help, this isn't going away. Like this, it takes a more brave, strong, resilient person to say, I need help, instead of pretending that you don't. Mm-hmm. Both Mel and I have been at a crossroads where we've had to say like, I need more help. And that, how brave am I, and put on a different type of pedestal for myself to say that. So important.
And look how self-aware you guys are. Look at the advice that you're giving. Look at like everything you've said on like, all of your episodes.
You know?
Yes. And I think that's a testament to the work that you all have done. And hopefully your audience is hearing and inspiring them to do their work, because it's for you. When you feel more aligned, when you feel more empowered, you feel better. And you got to do your shadow work. You got to get in there. You got to like empty out the proverbial closet and throw Marie Kondo some shit. Like, goodbye. Thank you. And then reorganize it and put it back. Like, that's the process. And it gets messier before it gets better. But it is absolutely worth it.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Yeah. Love it.
That's beautiful. That is so beautiful. I feel like we have to like shout out to our shared therapist, Michelle. We both have the same therapist. So like shout out to Michelle. I mean, where would we be without you? But a mantra to end on.
So many.
I mean, we've said probably 15,000 since we've started. I can't wait to write them all down and put them on my vision board. But any that are sticking out to you right now in this moment,
I will say, I don't believe in work-life balance. There's no such thing as work-life balance. I do believe in work-life alignment, or parent-self alignment. If you're not working, like you are still working. So stop trying to seek balance, seek alignment instead. And you can do anything, but you cannot do everything.
I love period. That.
Done. Period.
Alignment.
Period. Alignment. So good. It's so good, because it's never going to feel balanced. It's so true when they say, if you see me succeeding over here, I'm failing over here. And it's like, is that the balance we're referring to? Because I don't think it is. Like, I think that's just a scale that's constantly tipping, and it's not balanced by definition. So the alignment, though, and just again, that holistic view is something I just love it.
Darryl, thank you so much for this intellectual vacation today.
This is my love language. Thank you for having me. Truly. I love this conversation and I love connecting with you guys on multiple levels. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for your time. Where can everyone find you?
They can find me online, like the geriatric millennial I am, at Dr. Darryl Appleton. You can visit me at my website, www.drdarylappleton.com. And that's D-A-R-Y-L, like Daryl Hannah from Splash, not Daryl Strawberry. for those of you who got that reference and know who those people are. And Feelings and Other F Words is a podcast you can get anywhere you listen to your podcasts.
Oh, wait, I have one more question.
Yes.
What's your favorite F word?
My favorite F. No one's ever asked me that because I'm always the one asking it. Thank you. My favorite F word is freedom. I love freedom because I love the ability to choose. And to me, freedom and alignment go hand in hand. When I think about my definitions of success, freedom is at the top of that personally, professionally, for my family, for myself, freedom for our time together. So freedom would definitely be the top there.
I love that. I'm a big if-then girly, too. It's like, if you want to be free, then you need to be aligned.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, like that. Mm. Very good. Well said.
You inspired it. Look at the impact here.
Well, again, thank you so much for your time. You all know where to find us at the MTake Podcast on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, all the fun places. Like, subscribe. Please share this episode with anyone that you think it would resonate with, which I think should be everyone. So just send it to every group chat that you have. I'll let you both go, even though I really don't want to. Love you both so much. Give yourself a smooch.
Bye. Toodles.